This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey. I'm your co-host, Suzanne Williamson, and with me, as always, is
Zachary Fruling.
Well, today we're going to be talking about doomed relationships. So be warned, all you non-shippers, we're totally going there.
This is kind of a depressing topic, Suzanne, but you picked it.
I did, and if you look at the statistics, there are tons of doomed relationships on Voyager. Pretty much the only healthy one, the long-lasting one we get, is Tom and B'Elanna.
It's a little hard to believe that that's the only stable long-term relationship in all of Voyager.
But it is.
But sure enough, it is. So we have plenty of material to talk about here tonight.
We do. And Harry, far and away, wins the Miss Lonely Hearts Award.
Yeah, you actually did your podcast homework, and you put together quite a list of these quote-unquote doomed relationships in Voyager. And far and away, Harry has the longest list.
He does. Poor Harry.
Poor Harry. You can't help but feel for the guy. He tries so hard.
Maybe he tries too hard. Maybe that's his downfall.
Maybe.
So with Harry, right away we have to start in with Libby. I mean, that was doomed because he got lost in the Delta Quadrant.
Well, that's particularly tragic, right? Because it wasn't necessarily doomed on its own merits. It was doomed because he got stranded.
But then remember, he went back with the coffee dude, and he still chose to leave Libby. So doesn't that say something right there?
Well, that's an interesting dilemma, because he's got to choose between something he really wants, you know, being back on Earth with Libby, and resetting the timeline, which he knows is the right thing to do, and he knows he's supposed to be on Voyager, even though he doesn't necessarily, quote-unquote, want to be there.
How many of us would really choose to reset the timeline as opposed to being with our one true love, which is how Harry viewed Libby?
Not only that, but Tom is there with him on Earth. He even has his bromance right there on Earth with him.
He's got the whole world on a string, and he gives it up.
Yeah, the next thing you know, Harry and Libby and Tom are going to hop a transport down to Vegas, meet up with Vic Fontaine, and then catch another transport up to Reno to see Sammy at the Cal Neva.
Totally.
He's got the world on a string.
Sitting on a rainbow.
So yeah, poor Harry. He kind of had everything he wants. He had Libby there on Earth, he had Tom as bromance, and he still chooses to go back to Voyager. So that was really doomed.
It was. But I think that's Harry's doing why it was doomed in the end. I mean, at first, it wasn't really his fault getting pulled in by the caretaker, but choosing to reset the timeline, Harry put the nail in the coffin on that relationship.
I can picture this conversation that didn't really happen on screen, but it should have happened. He could have talked to a coffee shop man and said, hey, can't you roll the dice and make sure Libby comes back to Voyager with me?
Yeah, he could have asked. The worst the dude could say is no.
He didn't even ask.
He didn't even ask. I think it's because he had already, like, started having a thing for Megan Delaney at that point.
Yes, that could be. He had already moved on.
Wow, Harry, that was pretty fast.
So you've got a pretty long list for Harry. Let's kind of run down your list.
Okay.
So looking at your list, the next one that pops out to me is Megan Delaney.
Out of that entire list, Megan Delaney pops out. Why is that?
I think because it became an ongoing meme, at least early on in Voyager, you know, Harry and Tom and the Delaney sisters.
That is true. That is true, even though we didn't get to see the Delaney sisters until much later.
And of course, it's Harry's luck that he falls for the wrong twin.
Yes. I don't think either one of those twins would have been the right twin for Harry, to be honest.
Why do you say that? You're saying it's inevitably doomed. Why do you say that?
I'm saying Harry's love life is inevitably doomed.
That's everything to do with Harry.
It's poor
Nothing
Harry.
To do with the Delaney sisters has everything to do with Harry.
Single Pip Harry.
Surely it can't just be because Harry's an ensign.
No, it's just because he's Harry and I think he tries too hard. So an example of Harry trying too hard, when Seven first comes on board and he starts to show interest in her, he lays it on a little thick. I mean, had he just held back and played it low-key, is what I'm saying.
You're saying you think Harry had a better shot with Seven of Nine than with the Delaney sisters?
Yes, I do, because in all actuality, Seven really hasn't dated anyone, whereas we don't know how many dates or boyfriends the Delaney sisters have had through the years at the Academy or anything else.
I guess it's fun to speculate, but...
I'm not saying anything about the Delaney sisters here. It's just, we don't really know their background. We don't have a fleshed out background for them.
What did the Delaney sisters do to you, Suzanne?
I always wanted a twin so I could be the evil twin.
So you know what my absolute favorite Harry Kim 7 of 9 moment is? It's from Someone to Watch Over Me when Seven is trying to pick candidates for her first date.
Yes.
And you know what I thought would be fun, Suzanne? I thought it would be fun if you and I acted out this scene together.
I would love to.
But to mix it up a little bit, I think you should play Harry Kim and I should play 7 of 9.
I was born to play Harry.
I was born to play 7 of 9, so.
Well, yes, you were.
Why, thank you. So without further ado.
That looks like the crew manifest.
The doctor asked me to pick a suitable candidate.
For what?
Lesson 10, the first date.
Your first date?
I've narrowed the list to two crewmen based on work performance and compatible interests.
I didn't know you had any interests.
Neither did I, but apparently they include astronomy, quantum mechanics, and music.
I play the clarinet, you know.
You are not one of the candidates, Ensign.
And Harry's balloon is deflated.
Poor Harry. He recovers pretty quickly, though. He's like, okay, well, maybe I can help you pick the candidates then.
Maybe he was setting her up to fail so he could pick up the pieces afterwards.
No, that's giving Harry way too much credit.
That's true. No ulterior motives for Harry.
He's a bit of a puppy dog. we're so terrible to Harry. I feel like this whole episode is turning into the Let's Pick on Harry show, which is a shame because I really love Harry as a character. You know, I noticed, Suzanne, that in the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook, that someone had accused us of not liking Harry Kim.
I think that's because I've actually come out and said before I really don't like Harry Kim.
Oh, you just don't like
Harry
Kim.
So that might be on me.
Well, I've never been a Harry Kim hater. I think Harry's a great character.
I don't hate him. I don't like his whining. If he could be less whiny.
Well, speaking of whining, who else does Harry whine about in Voyager?
Oh, Mirena. I think he whines about her the most.
Oh, yes, Mirena.
The hologram that he met in Neelix's resort program. And then he goes to Tuvok for some meditation techniques.
You know when Harry goes to Tuvok for romance advice, that it's not going well.
Well, didn't he go to Tuvok to try and get over her? To get her out of his mind?
Yeah, he was going to go full-on Vulcan.
Yeah, that's also when he started picking up Kalto.
Yes. Is that when he started playing Kalto the first time?
Yes, because he was trying to focus his mind with the Kalto and failing miserably, as I think most of us would playing Kalto.
You remember that old Chessmaster 3000 program on the PC back in the day? I can picture Tuvok saying, I don't have time for this, Harry. Here's your Kalto 2000 computer simulation. Go play.
But that would be bad because then Harry would be playing it at his station on the bridge and he'd get in trouble.
Yeah, who knew that single player Kalto would be the solitaire or the Sudoku of the 24th century?
I see it more of a Minesweeper.
Minesweeper.
Yes.
Does anyone play Minesweeper anymore? Is that even a thing?
I think my mom does. I think she goes back and forth from Minesweeper to Solitaire.
Now I want to stop recording right now and see if my computer actually has Minesweeper on it right now and I didn't know it. So Moraine is an interesting pick, Suzanne, because not only is she on Harry's list, but she is also on your list for Tuvok.
Well, she is, because Tuvok got a little connection going on with her and then was able to, you know, bring himself back and realize, hey, this isn't really a hologram. This is some weirdo in that nebula out there that has hacked into our system.
Who knew that Tuvok just wanted someone to play Kalto with?
That's true. She did play with him, didn't she?
Mm-hmm. Yes, she did.
There was a lot of Kalto going on in that episode.
Wow. That's a deep metaphor, Suzanne. There was a lot of Kalto in that episode. I think you can say, as a blanket category of doomed relationships, that anything involving a hologram is probably a doomed relationship in Voyager.
Even if you're a hologram yourself?
Oh, you mean the Doctor.
Yeah. I mean, his list doesn't look that great, so you might be right.
The Doctor is in a special category, right? The Doctor is not just any hologram. He's a special hologram for some reason. A little more sentient, a little more with it, a little more hip.
hip to be square.
Yes. Now, this is a really interesting question, Suzanne, because generally in Voyager and elsewhere in Star Trek, holograms are not taken to be sentient. They're more like puppets. They're more like automatons, right? Mm-hmm. But the Doctor is a special kind of hologram where he is sentient and he does function as part of the crew. And it's not clear exactly why some holograms are sentient and some holograms aren't. So I was thinking that, like, falling for a run-of-the-mill hologram in Voyager, like Mirena, is doomed to failure. But if you fall in love with the Doctor type of hologram, the extra sentient kind, whatever the difference is, not as doomed.
But Mirena wasn't really a run-of-the-mill hologram. She was a person masquerading as a hologram.
But she started out as a run-of-the-mill hologram.
No, she just showed up.
She wasn't programmed into the hologram?
No, that person made her.
Oh, see, maybe I misunderstood this, because I assumed she was co-opted. Like, she started out as a run-of-the-mill hologram as part of Neelix's resort program. But it turns out that she was co-opted at some point. At a certain point, this alien presence takes over, but she started out as part of Neelix's program, like every other hologram in the program.
Now, the way I read it, because nobody had remembered her before a certain point, like Harry had never met her, and then all of a sudden, here's this hologram. Oh, so I was thinking that the Mirena hiding in the nebula saw Neelix's resort program and was like, okay, let me make my own little avatar.
This is like the 24th century version of spontaneous generation, but it's spontaneous generation of holograms.
I saw it kind of like Second Life, if you ever played Second Life. This was Mirena playing Second Life.
Or World of Warcraft or whatever. That's actually the Doctor in the Beowulf program. That's more like World of Warcraft. This is more like Second Life, you're right.
I have to say, the one that gets my vote for the most tragic and the most doomed relationship for Harry would be Linus Paris, which is Tom and Kes's daughter. We get to see her and Harry's son interacting with everyone, and then poof, they're gone and they never happen.
And they seem genuinely happy. They seem like they were having a great time.
They did. They seemed very happy. And poor Tom stuck with Harry as a son-in-law, which is just really weird when you think about it.
That is one of the weirdest relationship consequences in Voyager. That Tom is Harry's father-in-law. The most tragic thing about Linus is that Harry, kind of by definition, doesn't remember anything about Linus because it never happened in true Voyager reset button fashion.
Yeah, nobody knows about Linus.
It's especially tragic if it never even happens.
I wonder if when Kes was making her report, she added in all these facts. Like, yes, I was married to Tom. We had a little girl. Her name was Linus. She married Harry. They had a little boy.
Like counterfactual alternate universe genealogy?
Yes. I mean, if she was going to make a report of everything that she remembered or went through during before and after for Captain Janeway, don't you think she would have included these items?
So some of these relationships are tragic because they started to occur and then didn't occur, or something happened, right? They fizzled out, whatever. Some of these are tragic because they never even happened.
Which makes it doubly tragic.
It seems doubly tragic.
Yeah, poor Linus never gets to exist.
In the better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all sense. That's a great pick, though, because they did seem like a pretty good match, all things considered.
Mm-hmm.
How long does Linus live? Does she live like an average of 9 years in a human lifespan? Does she live like 30 years? Do we know? Do we find out?
I don't know. I mean, she had to have aged pretty quickly, so I'm guessing she has more of the Ocampan aging, as well as their son. He aged rather quickly.
He did. That's right. We promise listeners that we're going to be done picking on Harry very soon, but the last one we want to talk about is Darren Tall, also known as Suzanne.
Space Mono.
Thank you, Suzanne.
You're welcome.
You were dying to say it. I know. Poor Harry didn't file the proper paperwork with Darren Tall.
Who knew that you had to file paperwork to have a relationship?
It's like it's like a vacation request at your work.
And honestly, how many of Voyager's crew have filled out the paperwork? I don't think Chakotay's ever filed anything.
And I really kind of want to know what exactly the criteria are for accepting or rejecting such an application.
Yeah, who gets the final say? Is it the captain? Is it the doctor?
Oh, that's a good question. I assumed it was kind of like Congress and the president. Like, it goes to...
You need an act of Congress to date an alien.
Yeah, it goes to the chief medical officer, gets approved, gets routed to the captain for signature, and only then is it permissible. I kind of want to do a rewrite now of this where Darren Tall ends up staying on Voyager and Harry just bioluminesces for the rest of the series.
So do they change his name to Ensign Glowstick?
Glowworm.
Glowworm.
Yeah, can't you picture it? They end up staying together and Harry bioluminesces the rest of Voyager, right? That's a hilarious idea.
He wouldn't need a Sims beacon when he goes on away missions. No, on away missions, if somebody's Sims beacon goes out, they'd be like, Harry, come over here for a second. I need a closer look.
Like Rudolph? Like,
yes.
Harry with your nose so blue? Yeah, poor Harry. He does try so hard, and yet it's always so tragic for Harry, and you have to feel for the guy.
You do. I wish they could have, like, thrown him a little bit more of a bone than what they did. Harry needed some stability besides Tom. He needed more than the bromance.
Yeah, Tom and Harry, if they're not careful, and if Tom hadn't got together with B'Elanna, they would have turned into the odd couple for sure. To do a little Harry recap here, we have Libby, Megan mm-hmm. Delaney, mm-hmm. Linus, Seven of Nine perhaps, Mirena, and mm-hmm. Darren Tall. That's a pretty impressive list of doomed relationships for Harry.
And there were more in there, I'm sure.
Yeah, we could name a couple others, like Irina yeah. from Drive, maybe, or even that woman, Udonna, from the Pleasure Planet. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Suzanne, I know you're dying to talk about Chakotay.
Aren't I always?
Chakotay has a pretty impressive list as well, in addition to Harry. So I'm thinking we should skip Chakotay for now, get all the other ones out of the way because they're easier and shorter, and we'll save Chakotay for the end because his list is also fairly long and impressive.
So if we're going to skip over my main man, Chakotay, for now, who are we going to go to?
Sorry to have delayed gratification there, Suzanne, but...
I'll deal with it somehow.
Well, I'd like to talk about Tuvok next.
Okay.
Because Tuvok's list is pretty short. Tuvok mm-hmm. is not often in and out of love, so to speak. He's Vulcan.
Tuvok is a busy man. He doesn't have time for that.
But Tuvok has exactly two tragic love interests in Voyager. The first one we've already mentioned, Mirena.
Yes.
Which falls under the don't fall for a hologram category that we already talked about. So we can dispense with Mirena a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But Nos from the episode Gravity presents a real problem for Tuvok.
A problem how? I mean, other than it being Lori Petty and she's amazing. How is Nos a problem?
Because it throws his whole Vulcan identity into question.
Oh, bringing up his past and how he fell for a non-Vulcan before.
Yes.
I see where you're going.
And so for Tuvok, it's very dangerous because his whole identity is wrapped up in this Vulcanness that he's cultivated, and he knows that he could lose control.
So that's why he ends up meditating on some rocks.
Yes, just Tuvok and Tom and the Rocks, yes.
It sounds like a Neil Diamond song. Tuvok and Tom on the Rocks.
I think what I love about this episode and seeing Tuvok and Nos play against each other is that Nos emotes at Tuvok, right? She just puts her feelings out there for all the world to see. She doesn't hide anything, doesn't hold anything back. That's who she is. And Tuvok just has to maintain this cold Vulcan stoicism. Otherwise, his entire identity is in jeopardy. And he just won't let his guard down in that way. And Nos just doesn't understand, can't understand how Tuvok could be like that.
And then she tells him off in her language, which I find humorous.
And then she says, "Logic, I hate logic."
Who doesn't hate logic, Nos?
Well, I did used to teach logic.
Oh, so Zachary doesn't hate logic. But I do, Nos. I understand your pain.
No. I'm the least logical former logic teacher you will ever encounter.
You're so confusing.
Complicated. Complex. And Lori Petty just does a great job as Nos, visually, non-verbally displaying her inability to understand Tuvok's stoicism.
She is a phenomenal actress. I mean, she was Tank Girl. Come on, gotta love Tank Girl. But yeah, as Nos, you can see everything she's processing without her speaking, which takes a lot of talent.
And I think everyone's been in a position similar to that, right? Where you've got feelings for someone and those feelings aren't returned and... you know, that's the position Nos is in. I find Nos an incredibly relatable character. And even Tuvok trying to kind of maintain the coherence of his identity in the face of something that he finds, I would say, tempting but distressing. Both of those characters strike me as incredibly relatable for different reasons.
Well, since we brought up Tom on the rocks with Tuvok, I think it's apropos that we move on to Tom's doomed relationship with Kes in two different timelines.
In two different timelines.
Yes, but it was in two different timelines. It's our timeline, Kes, and then before and after Kes. It was doomed on both lines there.
Do you think Tom and Kes were doomed solely because of Neelix?
I think Neelix had a very large part playing in it. At that point with Neelix and Kes, Neelix was very clingy and possessive and extremely jealous of anyone that showed interest in Kes.
Especially Tom.
Especially Tom, because he, for some reason at that point, he couldn't stand Tom. And I don't really know why.
I don't either.
Maybe it was just because Tom showed interest in Kes.
I think it fundamentally boils down to that, doesn't it?
Yeah, probably.
I can't think of any other reason, really, other than Tom's general, you know, past and background. And
yeah, so definitely it's Neelix's insecurity that brought it about.
But, you know, for a supposed bad boy, he's kind of a, you know, pretty boy, baby face, blonde-haired, blue-eyed one.
He is so not a bad boy.
Right, exactly. That's my point. There's not much to hate about Tom. So, Suzanne, I know you're not a wrestling fan, like I have been in my life. And in wrestling, mm-hmm. there's a distinction between heels and faces or baby faces. And heels are the bad guys and faces are the good guys in wrestling. So the fundamental question about Tom is, which is Tom? Is he a bad boy at the beginning of Voyager? Is he a heel? Or is he a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, baby-face wrestler, if Tom were a wrestler?
Tom's not a bad guy. He's never been a bad guy.
So you put Tom in the face category, the baby-face category.
If I have to put him in some wrestling category, I guess yes.
Okay, that's good. So that's my point. Neelix has no reason to hate on Tom. Other than Kes.
So what category is Neelix in then? Is he in the Captain Lou Albano category?
He might be in the Macho Man Randy Savage category, being jealous over Miss Elizabeth.
Is he snapping into a Slim Jim?
Down in the mess hall, absolutely. No, that's the best analogy I can find in wrestling, because the Macho Man was always jealous over his manager and real-life wife, Miss Elizabeth, and I could picture Neelix kind of playing the Macho Man. So this was actually a serious question. Do you think Tom and Kes would have been a good match had it not been for Neelix?
I honestly can't say yes or no, because it's like both yes and both no. I don't think it would have been a very interesting relationship to watch.
They don't seem to have all that much in common, really.
No.
Tom's not that big into aeroponics. Yes, he ends up kind of taking over for Kes in sickbay. So they would have that in common, in theory.
Then he wouldn't be forced to take over for Kes in sickbay.
Right, exactly.
I mean, the Tom and Kes that we saw in Before and After, that was an interesting couple. A few years down the line, Tom had the heartbreak of losing B'Elanna. Kes helped him get over it. Tom and Kes in the beginning of the series, not so interesting.
That's a good point, because the Tom and Kes that we saw in Before and After were very different versions of themselves. Mm-hmm. Well, they'd matured. Both of them had.
Yes.
In different ways, of course. But I think Before and After at least showed it to be a plausible match, a plausible non-doomed relationship.
But then it ended up being doomed because It didn't happen.
Yes, and by definition, if it doesn't happen, it's doomed.
It is. Doomed to never exist.
And you're like, logic, I hate your logic.
Speaking of Neelix's insane jealousy that came between Tom and Kes, that brings us to Neelix and Kes and that doomed relationship.
It's a shame because I feel like Neelix gets better about that over time. Like the insanely jealous Neelix from the beginning of Voyager kind of tones down a little bit towards the end of Kes's run on Voyager. So Neelix is getting better.
He does get better about it, and then, unfortunately, Kes loses interest. Maybe she was only interested because of the insane jealousy. Because she needed to talk Neelix off the ledge so many times. Or did she just outgrow him?
I think she outgrew him, clearly.
Yeah, probably. Which is sad, because, I mean, what in that way, was she just using Neelix and not really cognizant of that fact?
That's a really good question, because Kes, being as relatively inexperienced as she is at the beginning of Voyager, is she cognizant enough to know even kind of what she wants and, you know, in a relationship or from Neelix? You know, is she sort of fully aware at that stage, or at a certain point does she become aware and then realize she doesn't need Neelix anymore? In other words, how conscious of a relationship is this for Kes?
I don't know either.
It's an interesting question.
Yeah.
Because you kind of get the sense that Okampans come like almost fully formed. Like, you know, after a week they're grown up.
They're born out of an egg like Mork from Ork.
Yes.
Nanu nanu.
Yes. So Okampans lay an egg and then Jonathan Winters pops out. Yeah. No, but really, because Okampans have to sort of age and grow up and become cognizant and become fully fledged adults pretty quickly in order for... Yes. Has to be, you know, what she is at the age she is. But what's the dividing line? Like, when do they become fully fledged adult Okampans?
The only thing that she knew for sure that she wanted at such a young age was to go to the surface. Did she use Neelix to keep her safe from the Kazon when she got there? There's so much that we don't know. So many unanswered questions.
I guess that's my point with I guess that's my point, that with Neelix and Kes, there are too many unanswered questions. We don't really know how fully fledged Kes's self-identity is at that point. So we don't know how conscious of a relationship it was with Neelix, or whether that was an early stage of her development that she develops beyond, or is she in a fully conscious relationship with Neelix and then she just changes her mind, because people do that.
It could have been that Neelix was like a high school boyfriend. And she just grew out of that stage, as most people do. I mean, there aren't many of us that are still with our high school love.
But which high school boyfriend is Neelix? Is he the jock? Is he the nerd? Is he the... What is he?
He's the geeky drama dude. So the guys that I would hang out with.
Who likes to bake on the weekends.
Yes. Yeah, Neelix was my friend in high school.
So yeah, it's pretty clear that Neelix and Kes are doomed for a number of reasons. Principally because Kes left.
But yeah.
At the end of the day, right? That pretty much doomed it. But Kes isn't the only tragic, doomed relationship for Neelix. Neelix has a couple of others.
He does. There was Tali in Random Thoughts, who was murdered thanks to B'Elanna's angry thoughts being transferred to someone on that planet. I mean, it's definitely something that would not have happened had Voyager not stopped there. But then also, Neelix wouldn't have had the small amount of relationship that he did with her.
Same thing with Harry and bioluminescing.
Yeah.
If Voyager hadn't stopped by.
Darn that Voyager for stopping by.
Well, it's doubly tough for Neelix, because Neelix was just getting over Kes, and then he falls for someone fairly quickly, and then she tragically gets murdered. And so that's... doubly tragic, doubly doomed. Not doomed because of the quality of the relationship, but doomed because of the way it turned out.
Because of circumstance.
And B'Elanna.
And B'Elanna. Oh, poor B'Elanna.
Yeah, do you think Neelix held a grudge? She didn't seem to have, but he could rightly have.
But it's not like B'Elanna did it intentionally.
No, that's true. It was subconscious projection, I guess. And as the name of the episode indicates, they were random thoughts. So the other one that comes to mind for Neelix was the Klingon woman, when Klingons were on the ship, whose name is, I'm going to spell it because I'm going to butcher it if I try to pronounce it without spelling it first. It's C-H-apostrophe-R-E-G-A. Is that Cherega? Or is it a hard C-H, like Cherega?
I'm not well versed in the Klingon language, so I can't really help you out.
It looks like Chirega to me, which doesn't sound particularly Klingon.
Maybe it's Chirega.
Chirega.
Chirega. My Klingon is awful. I'm sorry.
So, without question, Neelix and the Klingon were a doomed relationship. But they made the most of it.
She was interested in somebody else to begin with, and I can't remember.
Wait, wasn't it Harry?
It was Harry. Yeah, and Neelix threw Harry against a wall, and she transferred her amour to him.
See, Harry truly does create his own hell.
Yeah, Harry's too delicate for a Klingon woman, especially a full-blooded Klingon woman.
It's kind of fun because you and I seem to have developed this pattern on To the Journey of doing these miniature rewrites. My miniature rewrite is suppose that Harry had been the one to throw Neelix against the wall, and Harry and the Klingon woman have a great episode.
So Harry ends up with a broken clavicle, is what you're saying.
Yes, amongst other things.
I don't think Harry could handle that. He wouldn't be able to play his clarinet.
You don't give Harry enough credit. You never do. So again, we're saving Chakotay for last because I'm forcing you to wait till the very end to talk about Chakotay. So moving on, let's talk about the Doctor. Well, we already dismissed holograms as inherently doomed, but we did give a caveat that the Doctor is an extra special hologram because he's extra sentient, and so his relationships are not ipso facto doomed.
But his relationships were doomed. Poor Doctor.
For example?
Freya, his first, for the lack of a better word, love.
Yes, in parentheses, see previous footnote about holograms.
I mean, he starts to have feelings for her, and boom, Freya's dead. Which is tragic because I really liked that character. I could see him going back and replaying the whole Beowulf thing afterwards.
It's just as tragic as Neelix and Tally.
It is, but it's different. I don't know how to say why it's different, but it's the Doctor.
Freya got to say goodbye to Lord Schweitzer.
I die with your name on my lips.
Schweitzer.
It was a great death, but still very tragic.
This episode is partly when the Doctor starts to realize that he's capable of having an extended set of emotions and feelings beyond what he was programmed with.
Mm-hmm.
His self-awakening, as it were.
You can see him start to care for her.
And for a hologram, he's pretty dashing and heroic, you have to admit.
He is. The Doctor's just that way naturally. Very heroic, especially in his own mind.
The thing that's tragic about Beowulf is that we know how the story ends.
But not in this case, because all's well in the end.
That's true.
We get Harry back, we get Chakotay back, the Doctor's fine. The only tragedy is Freya doesn't come back, because... Well, I guess she could come back if they just replay it.
Of all the things not to do a Voyager reset button on, they can't just reset button Freya?
They did not reset button Freya, no.
Why is there no Freya reset button?
Because the Doctor's love life at that point didn't matter enough.
They rebuild Fairhaven, for gosh sakes. They can't bring Freya back? But you'd think they could just reboot Freya.
You would think, but they don't. And that is tragic.
No, I totally see where you're going with this. I think the Doctor and Freya made a pretty good match. Mm-hmm. Insofar as they're both holograms, and one is probably a more sentient hologram than the other.
Yes. Yes, he is. But she is also the one that he first tells his name to, isn't she?
Schweitzer.
Mm-hmm. Well, his first name. He's had many.
Not Joe.
Joe Van Gogh.
So the next one that comes to mind for me for the Doctor is Dinara Pell.
Oh, I love Dinara Pell. The only Vidian I loved.
She even has a nickname for him.
He does. Schmullis.
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 It's charming.
And they go parking. It's so sweet. Their relationship is sweet. But once again, doomed. Because she must go back to her people and help them through the phage.
And she has a holographic body. See previous note on holograms.
Yeah. You and the hologram thing.
Why is it so doomed?
Because she has to leave and go help her people.
That's true, I guess. But she comes back to save the day.
She does, but that's only because, you know, he asked for the cure for Janeway and Chakotay so they could leave New Earth. Unacceptable.
You know, it's doomed, but not doomed for any really good reason. Yes, she has to go cure the phage, but the Doctor and Dinara Pell, kind of like the Doctor and Freya, but more so, were a pretty good match, all things considered. So, other than the fact that she had other things to do. It's not like Tuvok and Nos doomed.
It would go in the same category as Harry and Darren Tall. They have to part ways. But still, that makes it doomed and tragic and ugh.
It almost sounds like we need a taxonomy of different types of doomedness.
Stop trying to make it so difficult.
Let's make a Venn diagram.
No Venn diagrams.
So yes, the Doctor and Dinara Pell, as charming as they were ultimately doomed, but not for a great reason. Voyager just had to leave. Who is next on your list for the Doctor? I've got my next choice for the Doctor, but I'm curious who your next choice is.
I would say Charlene, which is his holographic wife, which falls into your hologram theory.
Yep, yep. See what you're doing there?
And this one has to be tragic just because I don't think he could ever go back because he would be reminded of the death of his daughter, Belle. So because of Belle's death, he had to close off the rest of the family, which I don't think is really healthy, but I guess it's what the Doctor needed to do at that point.
Yeah, and there's just a fundamental problem here. It's the reset button problem, right? They can bring Fairhaven back. They can bring Freya back. They could bring his holographic daughter back, right? Why don't these things happen?
Yeah, I don't know. Or at least keep bringing the family back and have him deal with that death. Go through it emotionally.
Unless at a certain point, the holographic memory engrams, whatever, however a hologram works, its algorithms get too complicated past a certain point, and they're too much a function of their unique experience that they're not archivable, and you can't reboot them and bring them back in the same state at a certain point.
And that didn't happen with Fairhaven. Hello.
That's true.
Yeah, I think it was just picking and choosing. Okay, yeah, we played with this, and now we're going to walk away from it.
So which is more tragic, the Charlene at the beginning of the episode or the Charlene at the end of the episode that was reprogrammed by B'Elanna?
From a believability standpoint, Charlene at the beginning was very tragic because I just, yeah, she would never exist. And Charlene at the end, it was very, for lack of a better word, human. And being there with family and dealing with Belle's death, I'm still just irked that we never saw them again and the Doctor never fully dealt with that loss.
I think you're right that the Charlene at the beginning of the episode was a bit more tragic, partly because B'Elanna was about to take a Batleth to her.
Would it be a holographic Batleth?
I can picture it now. So B'Elanna's in this holographic family environment from the Doctor. She says, computer, Batleth, now.
Okay, so that was my pick for the most tragic with the Doctor. What is yours?
I think it would have to be Seven of Nine, honestly. Aww. That's pretty tragic because they're such a good match. The Doctor and Seven are a way better match than the Doctor and Freya. Way better match than the Doctor and Dinara Pell.
I would have to disagree with the Dinara Pell one.
Uh-oh, we have a Dinara Pell, Seven of Nine celebrity death match coming up.
I see the Doctor and Dinara sharing more interests. Whereas the Doctor and Seven, I would see more of it as a Pygmalion type relationship.
I don't know. The Doctor and Seven have music. They've got other interests.
That's through his life coaching. So is he just...
Why did you put life coaching in irony quotes?
Because I did.
Why did you air quote life coaching?
Because I did. I don't know. I wasn't thinking.
Do you think it's not real life coaching? Is it seduction in the guise of life coaching?
No.
What are you talking about?
I wasn't saying seduction.
It kind of is at a certain point.
Maybe he was just steering Seven to his interests.
People do that all the time, though.
They do. But I just see Dinara as being a better match for him than Seven, even though I really liked the thought of Seven and the Doctor, and I've read many, many a fanfic on it.
No, wait. It would have to be a way wishy-washier Seven of Nine to go, oh, I like opera now because the Doctor loves opera.
I'm not saying she's wishy-washy, but you were bringing up their interests. Saying, oh, they have music.
Yes, and you're air quoting interests again. What's with the air quotes tonight?
I just keep doing it. My fingers are making bunny ears. And it's only one hand. It's only one hand doing it.
You're like the Doctor in his life coaching with his interests.
Stop trying to make what I say solicitous. It is not. I'm just saying Dinara Pell is a better match for the Doctor.
No air quotes needed for Dinara Pell. Got it.
Exactly. Even though I really like the thought of the Doctor and Seven, I think they would have been a cute couple and would have helped each other grow. But my heart is still with Dinara.
Maybe from a doomed standpoint, the Doctor and Dinara Pell is a better choice because they do have so much of a natural rapport. It doesn't have kind of the unrequited love connotation that the Doctor and Seven have. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of tragic because it just didn't work out because of circumstance, but it was a pretty good match. Whereas the Doctor and Seven never quite achieved that level of equality.
Yeah, they were never on the same page at the same time.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Okay, so you convinced me. The Doctor and Dinara Pell were more doomed and more tragic than the Death
Yay! Seven. I win.
See, you won one.
Finally. So moving past Seven and the Doctor, I would say another tragic, doomed relationship that the Doctor had would be his wife, Lana, which happened in the future that Admiral Janeway made disappear.
Yes, in the category of tragedies that didn't really happen.
That seems to happen a lot on Voyager, doesn't it? I'm noticing a theme. There's this thread that runs through.
It is an interesting question. Can it be doomed and can it be tragic if it never really happened?
Yes, because well, in Lana's case, she still exists somewhere, I'm guessing. Unlike Linus.
Now, that's true. She doesn't just go away. She's just not with the Doctor anymore. That's true.
Yeah. She might have found another hologram. Or perhaps an android.
Maybe she just ends up with a different EMH. Not the Doctor, but a different EMH Mark I.
Aren't they all mining on some asteroid somewhere?
She likes the hands-on type.
Okay. So is she living on the mining colony with all of them? And how does she tell them apart? This could be a weird case of evil twin syndrome.
This is like the Delaney twin problem.
Times a thousand?
Yes. I kind of wonder how many EMH Mark I's there actually are. Are there hundreds or thousands or millions?
I don't know, but they're all reading or playing Photons Be Free.
Yes. Well, Lana does like theater, presumably, so.
True.
It is tragic because the Doctor, future Doctor, seemed genuinely happy.
He did. He even picked out his name by that point. He was Joe. We don't know his last name, but he was Joe.
I like to think of Lana as Lana Van Gogh.
Mr. and Mrs. Joe Van Gogh. Oh, Doctor and Mrs. Joe Van Gogh. Excuse me.
Listeners that have only recently begun listening to The Journey will not understand this reference.
Please go back and listen to Joe Van Gogh.
See our episode titled Joe Van Gogh.
All right, Zachary, is it now time to talk about some Chakotay?
Well, no, because not only do we have to talk about Janeway first, but we have been talking about all of the other characters' doomed relationships for quite a long time already. So I'm going to make you wait one more week, and we should come back and talk about Janeway and Chakotay's doomed relationships, not just with each other, their other doomed relationships, next time, and I'll make you wait one more week.
Oh, man, Zachary, that's tragic. Well, it's been fun talking about Harry Kim, a.k.a. Ensign Lonely Hearts. But that isn't the only thing we've been discussing on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm. The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
You're killing me. I'm going to pull my hair out if that happens, because I really do need to know.
What if, like, I just had a crazy idea. What if they get the captain in the first episode, but they continue on with these lower deck characters so well that we just never see the captain, and it's like the teacher in Charlie Brown, like right?
The 602 Club.
And I don't know that I would want much more humor in this movie.
Right.
I feel like this is a survival story. Like, this is her surviving what's happening to her, not her controlling the situation like we see in future Tomb Raider movies, where she kind of controls what's happening. And this is definitely Lara Croft is responding to what's happening to her. Like, the entire scene on the island is her trying to get away.
Warp 5.
So the A plot is the dog, and the B plot is his infatuation with T'Pol?
Well, there's actually kind of a C plot. Well, as part of the A plot is of why Porthos is ill.
Okay, why is Porthos ill again? I'm going to say this is definitely not essential.
I'm not saying that it's essential or not essential.
Continuing mission.
Yeah, there's a certain concession with that. If you look at the the refit, obviously, is your example. For the director's cut remaster of motion picture, they added a few more CG shots. They're quite hard to tell because they painstakingly tried. You know, Foundation Imaging was really, really good at that, and they built a certain rig, and you know, it's lit. You know, the pylon's being lit from the ship itself. There's underlights. There's like the registry and stuff. But actually, you are correct in a sense. A couple of the lights, especially on the nacelles, don't actually come from a bulb. There's no practical way those lights can emanate from anywhere without magic.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
Well, we would love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to share your thoughts with us. The best place to join in the larger conversation with us is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Just choose Message to a Trek FM Show and select To the Journey. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. Well, Suzanne, when you're not busy plotting the demise of your future relationship with Commander Chakotay, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network?
I would never, 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 ever think about that. Chakotay and I are strong. But you can find me popping up in the Babel Conference or on Twitter. My handle is KJaneWay8. And Zachary, when you're not singing old school Frank Sinatra songs with Vic Fontaine, where can our listeners find you?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek.fm as co-host of MetaTrek's Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy. You can always find me in the Babel Conference if you'd like to talk about Voyager with me in there. And you're welcome to follow me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Fruhling. That's Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, Fruhling, F-R-U-H-L-I-N-G.
If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. All available through our special patrons website, The Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
Well, there are a few people we'd like to thank from around the network. We'd like to thank C. Brian Jones, the founder and publisher of Trek.fm, and the most bioluminescent of the bunch. Our executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Kenneth Tripp, Aaron Harvey, our art director, Richard Marquez, our production manager, and Brandon Shea Mutala, our Patreon manager. And a special thank you and a shout out to our five associate producers here on To the Journey. We'd like to thank Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, Richard Marquez, Patrick Carlin, and Norman Lau. Thank you very much for your support of To the Journey and Trek.fm.
Well, join us next time where we'll be going through some alternate universe genealogy. But until then, this has been To the Journey.